Welcome to the Scuff Podcast, where we talk about U.S. soccer.
I'm proud and excited, as George Weah might say, to kick off our recap of yesterday's draw with England. It was scoreless, but we had a couple chances, and our midfield controlled big portions of the game, and we scared them. Greg, how you doing?
I was entertained. I was entertained. I'm a little bit lukewarmer, I think, than a lot of people on the overall like concept of the game, which we'll get into. But overall, like again, I'm pleased with the way we played. I think I'm doing okay. We're still alive at the World Cup.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many ways to get into this discussion, but I think a couple of things we should take care of first. Let's sort of talk about what England was. They were right up there in the top five favorites to win the World Cup. Now, you can argue about whether that was justified or not, but they do have an extremely famous, talented team. And we did, I mean, nobody can say we didn't hang with them, listening to and reading some stuff from England. I think a lot of people there are very disappointed in the way England played, but they also admit that the U.S. outplayed England for at least big parts of the game.
Yeah, England are definitely powers at this point, right? World Cup semifinalists in 2018, Euro finalists lost on penalties in 2020, 2021, depending on what asterisk says about that Euro tournament. So they are clearly a team that is loaded with talent and has been effective in tournament play. And I think we'll get more onto their tournament play effectiveness as well for context.
Yeah. Well, because they beat Iran 6-2 on Monday. The path forward for the U.S. is pretty simple. We just got to beat Iran on Tuesday and we advance from the group.
Yeah, so that's the path forward. And we can talk about the context here for both teams, I think, because I think it does matter. The U.S., because of the Wales-Iran outcome, Iran beating Wales in that early kickoff yesterday, the U.S. knew that against England, a win and a loss and a draw were effectively the same result. You know, there's a very narrow scenario that a tie helps the U.S. But for the most part, like a loss and a draw equivalent. So we go into that game, tournament dynamics wise, we go into that game against England half a goal down. For England, the math was totally different because of that outcome of the morning game. England knew that getting to 4 points, a draw with the U.S., meant that they would effectively be through to the next round already, because the U.S. and Iran play each other on the last day. Both of those teams can't possibly get to 4 points. Only one of them can. And Wales can only get to 4 points by beating England, but then they will be well behind England on goal difference unless they win by 3 goals. That's what Wales would need to do.
Right.
Would need to do to make up the goal difference. And even then, they're still behind on the next tiebreaker, which is total goals scored. So Wales would actually have to beat England by 4 goals in the last game to get through, no matter what happens in US-Iran. So England can basically now lose their last game by 3 goals, and they still advance in the World Cup. So when we talk about England being an effective tournament team, England knew a draw in this game puts them into the knockout rounds with a game to spare. So they had very little incentive to like push urgently and stretch themselves out a little bit to try to get that goal. So that's the context. And I just like, I can't escape the tournament dynamics. That's all that I like am consumed with in these competitions. I can't just ignore that context in the overall like big picture of this soccer game.
Right. And you could see, if you looked closely, you could see those numbers streaming across Jack Grealish's eyeballs when he came on. No, I'm just kidding. I think that's all legitimate, of course. But I also think, you know, England and the USA both wanted to, at least some people on the field, wanted to win the game. And England were, by the account of Gareth Southgate himself, the team was dejected by the way they played against the US, the way the US forced them to play in some ways. So I think you're sort of angling towards, well, England was happy to get a draw. That's how the game played out, right?
So England were happy to get a draw. And then the ironic and the thing that left a little bit of the sour taste in my mouth for this game, which was otherwise like a great performance by us, was that we were also very clearly okay with a draw. You know what I mean? Like we were very clearly like, the draw itself is a worthwhile thing. And that's where like that, I just can't comprehend that. Like for me, the draw itself is nothing if it doesn't advance our hopes in the tournament. But I guess I'm open to the idea that like the morale of the team and, you know, I mean, like having that in their, on their resume now, the draw against England, like helps their mentality for the last game. But it seems strange to me that would be the case. You know what I mean? It's like, do everything you can, throw everything at them. If you concede, because you've gone all out for a goal, fair enough. And I don't think like these players would not understand that.
Right. Yeah.
It's just the last 5 minutes. Like if we just, the last 5 minutes of the game have really shown that, you know what I mean? Like our goalkeeper going up for a corner or that last free kick, if we're doing that to at least signal that, yes, we understand that the goal in the win is the only thing that matters for advancing out of the group, I would have felt fine, but we clearly didn't. So that just, I was just like, what are we doing here? We're just taking the draw. We've played very well, but we're just going to take the draw and sort of concede, mm-hmm. That we now must beat Iran, because a win against England would flip the draw scenario in our final game, where at that point a draw against Iran would send us through. So we'd have two outcomes where we could advance. Now we must beat Iran. So that's it. That's my only wet blanket to throw on what was otherwise a very intense and entertaining and again, pretty much excellent performance from the US.
And it's a little confusing why a draw didn't do anything for us last night, but let me just explain it really quickly. Iran, because they beat Wales, was on 3 points. They're on 3 points. And we were on 1 point going into the England game. So now we're on two. Now we have two, thanks to two draws. Even if we draw Iran, because they have 3 points, they'll go to four. So they'll be ahead of us no matter what. My family group chat was a little confused by that. So I thought I'd explain it. That's what's going on. And then one other thing I want to talk about before we get into the lineup and the timeline is just sort of the cultural moment of it. I had this whole World Cup circled as a chance for the men's national team to win over more Americans. And I think for me, winning over Americans is a little more important than winning over the rest of the world. And I bet if you pin down Greg Berhalter, he would probably say the same thing. I don't know that this game may have done more to change the way the world views American soccer than the way Americans view American soccer. Because I think people who watch the game who know soccer, and most people around the world are like soccer and know it pretty well, can see that we were going toe to toe with England, and I don't think most people expected that. So that probably did something for the way people view soccer in America around the world. However, it was a scoreless draw, and for like your casual American sports fan, I don't know how much they care that we, you know, hit the crossbar once and had a 0.2 XG chance go begging in the first half. You know, I just don't. I mean, we got some anecdotal evidence on the call-in show last night. Somebody was in Waukee, strangely enough.
There we go.
And said they were at a bar where there were some casuals won over. Mario in Southeast LA said a bunch of his Mexican American friends were impressed with the way the U.S. played. But then, you know, Vince was in Louisville and he said that his friends that he went and watched the game with at a bar, like, man, this is boring as hell. So who knows?
I mean, we have some comparison points even in this tournament, right? Like the way Canada played against Belgium, you know, got a lot of people impressed, a lot of people. And I think, right.
Yeah.
And, you know, so you can kind of say, was our performance sort of at that level? Was it better? Was it worse? And then can you really expect any kind of a long-term payoff from this game if we don't advance and continue to build on the momentum, or will it just sort of fade into the night?
Well, you need to, for it to have a long-term impact, you need to inspire the children. And I'm not
legitimately,
sure.
I legitimately think that's true.
No,
right?
I do too. And I don't know that this did that, though I think it was a good, I agree it was a good performance. I thought it was, I was happier with it than you were.
Well, we have now set up I know I'm the wet blanket here. We've now set up a perfect reenactment of 2010. Where we get the two draws in the early games, must win our final game. That's what we need in 2010, half a goal behind. And we all know what happened in 2010. let's see a replay in 2022.
Hopefully it's a little better game before the last moment than that one against Algeria. That's another thing is we have the benefit of these of doing these historic recaps where we watch old US World Cup games and review them, you, me, Watki, and Vince. This was way better than that. We were 100%. We had much more control of the game.
Yeah, we were doing things in this game. Like, we did some things. Those things didn't always lead to clear-cut chances, but we weren't doing anything in that 2010 game, and we still weren't getting clear-cut chances.
Right. Okay, let's do the lineups. Ready?
Let's hear them.
All right. It's actually, Berhalter made only one change to the lineup that faced Wales. He replaced Josh Sargent with Haji Wright in the front line. Otherwise, it was the same. Turner in goal, Dest, Zimmerman, Ream, and Robinson across the back line. Tyler Adams, Weston McKennie, and Yunus Musah in the midfield. And then Tim Weah, Haji Wright, and Christian Pulisic across the front line. England made no changes to their lineup that drilled Iran 6-2 on Monday. It was Pickford in goal, Trippier, Stones, Maguire, and Shaw across the back line. Bellingham and Rice in the midfield. It was not a 4-2-3-1. It was a 4-3-3. This is an important thing. It was so Rice as the six, and then Bellingham and Mount as the advanced midfielders, and then Saka and Sterling on the wings, and Harry Kane up front.
And then I'll do one more mini complaint here is that we, you know, knowing the dynamics of the group and running out McKennie and Sergiño Dest, who are on yellows, Tim Ream as well, with the possibility of another yellow card suspending them for the Iran game, again, makes me think like, okay, then we are going to try to win this game. Like, we're putting out the best team to win. We're not just conceding that, you know, it all just comes down to Iran. So we're risking those players on their yellows. But we Absolutely. Didn't actually risk them clearly with like the true intent to go out and get the win that we needed to help us. So that was another sort of, it's just like a disconnect in my brain. That is like, we're taking these risks, but not actually taking the risks that we needed to at the end of the game to get anything worthwhile out of.
Well, it's a little bit like the final World Cup qualifying window when we played Mexico at the Azteca. And then we had Panama at home, and then we had Costa Rica on the road. And the thought was, well, let's essentially like not even worry about the Mexico game because our chances of winning are so low. Let's just put all our energy into this Panama game. That's the one that really matters. And Berhalter didn't do that at all. You know, he like threw the entire kitchen sink at Mexico, like a first choice lineup, and we got a draw. We could have probably won that game, and then we did the same thing against Panama. It's a little bit like that, you know.
Yeah, you definitely could have approached it with that the same mentality of the many hypotheticals for that window. Only, of course, in that window, the draw against Mexico proved to be very important because that point kept us level with Costa Rica,
That's
who
true.
Pulled off the 9-point window and sat even with us at the end. And so it was goal difference that put us through. So that point against Mexico, vital here. It's just sort of the opposite. Like, the point is really nothing. So we had to win, and we were in position to at least go for the win, and chose not to. I'm saying I'm going to be done talking about it, but I know it's going to come up again in the chronology.
Oh, well, I think you're thinking about it in sort of cold, ruthless. How do we advance at the World Cup terms? Which I'm not trying to invalidate that. That's important. I do suspect that. There's like some morale stuff going on, like you alluded to earlier. And I think Berhalter's just more of a soccer evangelist than you are, you know?
That's fair. And that is fair. So we'll have to see if those good vibes end up being worth something in the Iran game. If we just come out really looking good, then I'll credit it to us earning the draw and not conceding late while we were chasing the game.
I mean, there's no doubt that we didn't optimize the percentages yesterday. I clipped these, so I'm going to read them. Let me just read a little bit from the BBC. This is their, you know, it's nice to read stuff from people who aren't buried in this stuff the way we are and fully committed to the US team. So this is the BBC recap. Pulisic troubled England's defense with his intelligent running and control and was desperately unlucky to see a powerful first half drive bounce off the woodwork with Jordan Pickford beaten. Leeds United's Tyler Adams was another inspirational figure as the USA fully merited their point and might easily have had all three, Greg. England have a history of trouble with the USA at World Cups, having lost in 1950 and drawn in 2010. They again proved to be a thorn in the side here, and come the final whistle, England's players and management looked relieved to have escaped with a point.
Of course they were relieved. They're into the next round of the World Cup. I don't know. Again, like, I don't know how you to not even address sort of the context is wild to me. It's the World Cup and the whole point is to advance, and England have done it, and they'll probably win against Wales anyway and win the group, which is also important. But they're through. They've advanced.
Right. And then a little bit more on the media tour. The New York Times story was from Andrew Keh, really leaned into this sort of changing global perceptions about the team idea. And he quoted Berhalter saying, "We're chipping away at it. You need games like tonight to be able to do that. Otherwise, it's hard for people to get an assessment of it. We're not done. Our focus is to keep going. And hopefully by the end of the tournament, we give people something to talk about," which I think is a nice, humble way to talk about it.
Totally fair. If we draw against Iran and crash out of the tournament, like the whole experiment will be considered an unmitigated failure.
Right. Let me also play a clip from Barry Glendening on Football Weekly, the Guardian's podcast. This is his assessment of the positives that England can draw from the game.
If you're trying to sort of extract the positives for England, there was a lot of good sideways passing at the back, punctuated occasionally by some backwards passing.
Well, Barry's actually nailed it, because the other positive you absolutely take away from that game for England is that they didn't have to expend very much energy. Like, the whole first half looked like an exercise from both teams in energy conservation, which I felt like was very wise for the U.S. to do for the first 45 minutes. England clearly weren't in a hurry to, make a bunch of runs bombing up and down the field either. So for as sort of sarcastic as he was being, like, it's a short tournament, and so being able to accomplish a goal while also not expending a ton of energy is a very valuable outcome.
Fair enough.
I'm stuck in the tournament dynamics. I'm sorry, everyone.
No, that's all right. Let's do the timeline. I think we should talk about the US's shape, because it was a little bit different. We set up in a 4-4-2 where Wright and Weah were the two, and McKennie was wide right, wide to the right, and Pulisic was wide to the left in the 4-4-2. Adams and Musa, of course, in the middle in front of the center backs. Wright and Weah were working to prevent the English center backs, Maguire and Stones, from passing to Declan Rice. And you're saying it was all energy conservation. It did look like they were a little bit confused and unsettled by what was... I mean, they weren't panicked, but they just didn't, they weren't playing with purpose. I think because the U.S. surprised them. They were in a 4-3-3, Declan Rice as a single pivot in possession. We were denying Rice the ball with Mount and Bellingham further up. Even when Bellingham came back to try to get on the ball, we would basically go man to man on Bellingham and Rice, Weah and Wright did. And they couldn't play through the middle, so they ended up playing it wide to the fullbacks. The fullbacks didn't really have anywhere to go. There were some kicks out of bounds, sort of speculative stuff down the wings that we cut out pretty easily. And yeah, that's it. I thought that set the tone for the game. Did you see anything else on our 4-4-2 and how England responded to it?
So first off, I was surprised too. And I bet England were surprised by this, because we haven't run a 4-4-2 since like the heady days of 2019 with Michael Bradley in the lineup. I mean, for real. So this, I was like, oh man, we're 4-4-2. Okay. Haji's not being asked to press the way we usually do. And in my head, I didn't expect it, because again, of the all or nothing nature of the game. I was like, oh man, maybe we'll come out and press, because who cares if we concede? Like, we have to create a chance, and our press is pretty good at creating chances, and England won't necessarily just hoof it over our press. So they might reward us by making some mistakes, but trying to do too much stuff. And then we come out in this 4-4-2 that was pretty passive, pretty low line of confrontation. And I see us doing it. I'm like, okay, this is fine too, because we can't press for 90 minutes. right? We saw our team run out of gas against Wales, even controlling the game as much as we did after 60 minutes. So now I'm thinking like, okay, this is like a throwback to the Bob Bradley days where, you know, the first 55 minutes of the game is actually an exercise in just killing off the first 55 minutes of the game because we don't have the depth to play for 90 minutes with our best players. So we'll just play with our best players for the last 30 and go for our goal for the last 30. And I really thought that's what we might be seeing here, was that we would sit in our 4-4-2, keep our shape, be disciplined, just eat up the first half that way. And England were playing along with it because, again, they were content with a draw, or at least I believe they were content with a draw. You know, they're definitely good enough to score even if they're just playing for a draw and beat you because they have some really good players. But this is kind of, I felt like I was watching it play out this way where England were content to sort of do the sideways and backward passing. We were happy for the, in my head, we would be happy for the first 45 to 55, 60 minutes, letting England do that and just letting the clock wind down. And then towards the end, we'd be like, okay, now we got to put in some fresh legs, really go for this thing. But yes, the 4-4-2 initially surprising. And I thought effective and smart to do that to start the game.
I think that's an important point that we couldn't press for the whole game against Wales. And you said 60 minutes. I don't even know if we could go past, like, make it to halftime doing what we were doing. We were so dynamic early in that game. And I would say, I don't know, after we scored, things slowed down a little bit. So maybe this is a tactical shift that is going to be useful for the rest of the tournament. You know, hopefully the tournament continues after Tuesday. Because we can't do that pressing. You're absolutely right. We cannot do it for more than a half, I don't think.
Well, and I don't see us doing this against Iran necessarily because I don't think Iran will have the ball as much as England want to have it. This possession stats through the first half were wild, right? It was like 65.
65-35 is about right.
Yeah. For England. So again, that just shows how content we were to let England have the ball, and England can keep it that long because they're not taking risks because they don't care to. The Iran game is going to be totally different. I wouldn't be surprised if the possession is flip. So it's our defensive shape is, will probably rarely be used unless we've already scored our goal and forced Iran to come back at us. Because I think they're gonna sit back in a deep block similar to how we just did, and it's going to be up to us to break them down.
Yeah, I hopefully we can talk about that more in the coming days, because it was, you know, England did score 6 goals on them. I don't think Wales was very threatening against Iran, though.
No, and I think what we'll want to do is watch the first 30 minutes of that England-Iran game before England broke through, because I feel like that's what we need to sort of expect from Iran. When it was 0-0, what were they doing? How are they doing it? How can we get in between them? But yes, back to this England game, where again, I was happy to see our guys mostly stay in their shape and make it just difficult. We made it easier for England to do less risky things. We just took away the dangerous stuff, and we're like, hey, why don't you just pass it back to this guy instead? And England were like, yes, gladly, we will pass it back to this wide open player who is not threatening at all, and we will just keep doing that.
I do want to mention a good clip pass from Matt Turner to McKenny at midfield in the third minute. Turner was adventurous with the ball at his feet in this game, and basically didn't put a foot wrong. I mean, it was a little bit white knuckle there a couple times, but he didn't screw it up.
Oh man, I wish so badly that we were in a position to ride Matt Turner to the knockouts, but we can't necessarily because he's been okay for the U.S. In his 20 odd games.
Yeah, and he said after the game that he was channeling his inner Jorge Campos, which I felt like that was just a message directly to you, Greg.
Had to be, because there's no way Matt Turner was watching Jorge Campos. I feel like he would have been too. He's not old enough.
Yeah, he's a student. He's a student of the game.
Yeah, but good on him for his history.
So England gets a good chance in the 10th minute, which I think was their best chance of the game. Well, outside of the Kane header at the very end. I think there's actually an asterisk on it because Haji Wright and Jude Bellingham clattered into each other down on the right, on our left touchline. both were slow to get back up and into the game, but the ball never went out of play. It went back to Harry Maguire. And then Declan Rice got on the ball with time and was sort of tapping it around, which he hadn't been able to do up to that point in the game. And then he plays it sideways to John Stones, and Stones hits a pass into Saka in the channel. Saka touches it to Trippier, and Trippier springs Bellingham, who slips it wide to Saka for the cutback to Kane. It's a very quick, lovely soccer sequence. And Kane does shoot from a very dangerous spot, and it's just a good block from Zimmerman, who gets down, deflects out of bounds. But I thought it was kind of interesting that it happened partly because Wright wasn't in position to do the pressing that he had been, not, it's not pressing, deny the passing lanes that he had been denying up to that game and would be denying from then on in the game.
Yep. You can see he arrives at England's distributing back just as he's making that pass upfield to Saka. So the guy had an extra 1.5 seconds to pick his head up and let it develop. And we'd probably take that away if Wright hadn't been in that net collision. This isn't to blame Wright. This is just describing the event.
Yeah.
But yeah, just beautiful technique from Saka. Great movement for England to get then into that space from Bellingham. And then Saka joins play. This is fantastic build up to try to disorganize the opponent with the ball.
And it makes me think, like, okay, if all they needed was 1.5 seconds of us not being in our shape to attack this way, how disinterested were they in attacking?
I don't know, man. I mean, sometimes it just comes off, right? And this time for England, it came off in like 5 straight touches and movements. And you know, like they caught us not quite rotating well enough at lightning speed. So like here, I'm just tipping my cap and I'm like, okay, well done. And then good on us in our scramble defense to put the ball wide of the post.
It doesn't make you adjust your position that England was just happy to tap the ball around and get a draw?
No, I don't think so. So it kind of reminds me of like friendlies we'll play against the best teams. Like when we play Brazil in the friendly, remember those days when we would play the best teams in friendlies prior to all of them jumping into regional competitions? You'd see this, right? You'd see them sleepwalking, you'd see them collecting their paycheck, and then suddenly they would just do like 5 straight touches where everyone's touch was flawless and their movement was stupidly efficient, and they would just be in behind us. And it was like, oh man, when they want to, they can do it.
Yeah, that was one of those sequences was when Anthony Robinson got beat, and it really hurt his reputation for years. That one time when he
that
got
2018 Brazil friendly, yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, I mean, I just appreciated the efficiency of that England move, and then appreciated our scrambling to defend it.
They got another ball across in the 14th minute from Saka, and it gets deflected and kind of rainbows down towards Harry Kane, but McKennie gets there first and heads it away. This chance comes from Adams jumping out of the 4-4-2 to challenge Stones on the dribble, and then Stones cleverly slips it into Bellingham in the pocket. Pocket sprays it out. I mean, Pocket doesn't do anything. Bellingham sprays it out to Saka. So kind of that in-out thing that we've been talking about that we want the U.S. to do more of. And also, I just noticed, you know, John Stones and Harry Maguire have, I think the general way people talk about them in the U.S. is like they're both kind of crap. Especially Maguire, but they're not, they're good. They're good. And seeing Stones do this, you know, and kind of contrasting it with the way Zimmerman was on the ball in this game, I think is interesting. It's like, it's almost like center back and maybe striker are the biggest gaps between us and a team like England.
Yeah. I mean, it's not going to stop us, banter wise, from, given Maguire the business. But I think when you have to actually acknowledge reality, I think Harry Maguire might start for the U.S. men's national
team. And Stone, I mean, just, it's hard to imagine Zimmerman, you know, sort of confidently dribbling into, not quite into the opponent's defensive third, but almost, and then playing a pass between the lines to I don't know. I don't think Zimmerman can do that. And Zimmerman's been, aside from the penalty he conceded against Wales, he's been kind of a rock defensively for the U.S. I think he's been quite good.
Adams jumping out of that 4-4-2 though, like I noticed that live too, and because it took me right back to 2010, where our 4-4-2 was not in any way as disciplined and as committed to keeping its shape as we were in this game. So this exception definitely stood out to me because he flashed out of the space and he left. He was next to, right next to, was it Bellingham? Abandoned Bellingham to come press the ball, and the pass went directly to Bellingham. So
yeah.
So even as he's pressing it and knowing that he's leaving this player, he didn't shape his body to like take that pass away. And so there's no way anyone else can rotate into his exact space that quickly. So he kind of, this time he definitely left us out with that energy.
It's almost like he gets antsy and he like needs to do something or something.
And he has such confidence in his ability to do something like that, yeah, where he's like, if I just burst out with my burst,
no one can stop me.
Yeah. It will surely disrupt, their possession. And in this case, it didn't. It just looked a little naive.
Yeah, it did. And it created a chance that could have gone differently. I do think our fullbacks, both Robinson and Dest, played quite well. So even when Saka or Sterling got on the ball, they were pretty resolute, both of our fullbacks. 16th minute or 17th minute, we get our first shot. It starts with kind of an interesting ball into the box from Shaw, diagonal, thigh high, but nobody really sort of connects with it. So it falls harmlessly to Turner, who sends Antony on a long run. Just brilliant goalkeeper distribution from Turner. I'm just kidding. It was fine. And he sends Antony on a long run. He rambles forward, taps it to Pulisic out left. Pulisic cuts in and then switches it for McKennie on the other side, who settles it and plays a ball into the box that Haji Wright latches onto, but heads well wide.
So I think this one's important in my mind, in the way I'm framing this game. This is an important moment for England because it's a warning shot to them, right? England get expansive and possess and create this shot. You know, we talked about Algeria 2010. This sort of reminds me of that. Like, if you really do come out and try to score goals, we can hit you back, right? Because England get big, they work the ball around, they get their chance on Turner. And then because they've just attacked and they're not back in their shape yet, and some of their guys are just kind of jogging, Jedi Robinson leaves six England players behind, and we get to attack England's back four. You know what I mean? And so that's like the warning shot. Like, hey, if you do this, if you do go for goals, we're good enough to come at you. And it wasn't just a one-off either. Like, it wasn't just the transition moment and then the chance. Like, even when the first threat sort of simmered down, our secondary buildup still was able to create something pretty effectively. So I do think we were like letting England know right here, we're not toothless. And I think, mm-hmm, I think that might have mattered for how ambitious they got the rest of the game.
Okay.
Maybe not.
Yeah, I mean,
it showed us that we're not toothless too. Like, it showed us at home, like, okay, we can run with these guys.
Right. And we, as you'll see over the next half hour, so basically after the that Saka ball almost falls to Kane, basically until right before the end of the first half, England didn't create any chances. And we created a few. So let's get into him. 20th minute, Musa tackles it off of Bellingham, and we move it, not crisply exactly, across the field for Dest to race into the final third. And his first ball across is blocked by the first defender. It gets recycled to him, and he crosses it right into Pickford's hands the second time. Especially the second time, there were other options, one of them being to pull it back for McKennie to shoot from the edge of the box. Not great decisions from Dest in the final third, but again, we're showing England that we can at least threaten them. The threat comes mostly because Musa can transition defense into attack. It's like he was primarily the guy doing that.
Yeah, and this was a great moment for him. The first to tackle, then, I mean, even as he's tapping the ball, he doesn't just stand up from the ground and like, okay, now let's watch and see what they do. He's up immediately and stealing another 30 yards upfield, where Pulisic then finds him back. So it's like a delayed give and go where we gain 25 yards. and then his ability to turn with the ball as he's receiving it. And again, this stuff all has to happen very quickly, or England will rush back and snap into their defensive shape. But because of how efficiently Musa and Pulisic get us out of that, go from D to attack, this is how we build the chance. And we committed some numbers to it. And again, just another moment where it's like, yes, we can play in transition. So if England play us honestly, if England play us straight up, they'll get their chances, of course. But we will come back at them, and we will put some stuff together. And we put something together right here. How about Tim Weah, too? I want to throw out Tim Weah, because he just had so many of those little moments. It was like a nothing. It maybe felt like nothing in the buildup. But he got a ball coming into his feet kind of hot at the top of the box. And normally, you know, this might be where an American attack breaks down, because that's tough to deal with, as you have, you know, one defender goal side to worry about, another defender tracking back hard from upfield. But Weah just like does a little Cruyff in a phone booth and sneaks it out wide to Dest. And anyway, I just really appreciated Tim Weah in this contest.
Yeah. Was that on this play? Because I thought
he did it several times, but on this one, yeah. So it's like Pulisic driving right at Weah. So it's only like a 5-yard pass, and Pulisic releases it to him pretty hot. And it's kind of bouncing because Pulisic had to get it over the lunging foot of the defender. So this is perfect. You got the defender lunging, it's coming into Weah, but it just handcuffs him a little bit. And so Weah daintily croises it right behind him, and the tracking back defender over pursues then towards the box. And that creates 8 yards of space for Weah to then feed Dest.
Okay.
So he just had a bunch of those cute little, like, you barely even notice them technical executions. But without them, we lose possession right then and there.
Yeah, and I think, you know, McKennie had a lot of that kind of stuff. Adams even had some, and Musa had a lot, had maybe the most of anybody, the most ball progression of anybody.
I think in the call-in show, Tara was talking about how it just looked like they were having fun out there. And those were the moments where I'm like, man, they are enjoying themselves. This is the World Cup. You're playing England. It's a big stage, and we're just pulling off some of this stuff. And yeah, I was on, like, again, despite being the wet blanket on this particular episode, I was loving this. I was loving most of this game. Like, that was great. I was enjoying this a lot.
I'm going to do a little bit of wet blanketing myself.
No. I'm contagious.
And no, not about the performance, but when we talk about changing the way the world views American soccer, it is kind of important to remember that where would we be without the dual nationals on our team, like players who were not developed in the U.S. And those are the ones I'm thinking of specifically are Dest, Robinson, and Musa. We are probably not a very good team without them. I mean, I'm not sure we're a very good team with them, but we're a much less good team without those three players. Those fullbacks are crucial. Musa is absolutely crucial in that midfield. So that's my last wet blanket thing.
All right, that's fair. And your wet blanket is more just an appreciation post.
Yeah. Yep. It's an appreciation blanket that's sort of damp.
You could almost say my biggest weakness is actually a strength.
Right. I think if Matt Hartman ever listens to this episode, he'll appreciate that point. All right. 26th minute, we get our big chance for West McKennie. And I'm going to play the Telemundo clip of it because it's kind of fun. Not the whole thing. It's a 14-pass sequence that ends with with Weston shooting from, what, 10 yards out?
Timothy Weah, Adams, Dest, McKennie, Pide Haji right, el centro.
This part, McKennie's all the way out on the right wing.
Sigue McKennie. Buena pelota dentro para Musa. Engancha contra Bellingham. Dest y el tiro en el centro, muchachos. Aquí viene. McKennie lo tuvo. Weston. Goles que no vuelven. El que se acaba de perder Estados Unidos.
It almost takes him by surprise. And it's interesting because, I'll just start from the beginning. It starts, everybody touches the ball in this passing sequence except Wright and Robinson, including Matt Turner. And Musa cuts through the middle with a little turn and outside of the boot pass to Pulisic after receiving the ball, I think from Turner, but maybe from like Tim Ream.
From Ream, yeah.
Okay. And then Pulisic turns Trippier and gets fouled, but the ref plays advantage, I think. So good stuff from Musa and Pulisic. And then Pulisic passes it to McKennie in space on the right side. And then he and Weah and Dest and Musa and even Adams, I think, just patiently pass the ball around on the right corner of England's penalty area until Weah has space to line up across. Nothing amazing, just a lot of probing and a little dribbling here and there and patience. I'll use that word again. Weah hits it into the area. No, so even after all that, it's still kind of like a speculative cross, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, and you know how I feel about him. But no, it's a... Yeah, I'd say it's speculative, right? I don't think Weah's even hitting it to McKennie because it's skipped right
so either.
By Haji. And I think he is just fired it into the mixer here. But
he has plenty of time to do it because of all the patience we showed.
Yeah, he did a fantastic job probing. Like, we were hitting some little short passes into the box. So I'm totally, I was loving this too, right? We are connecting. We've talked about this with the women's team a lot, that lack of patience, the sort of not willing to wait and see if you can make the defense stretch or make mistakes, just whipping it in at the first opportunity. We had England moving around, having to change assignments. So yes, this is another hugely positive moment for the US, and it's not strictly in transition. In fact, not at all transition when we're just starting it with Matt Turner and Tim Ream in
right.
a basic build-up shape. So that's, again, that's a telling moment for a team that has had a lot of trouble creating chances from that possession.
Right.
But he has to put that on frame.
What? Yeah, Jesus Ferreira definitely would have put it on frame. It's a weird one because it goes like inches behind Harry Maguire's back. He's bear hugging Haji Wright, which I noticed Maguire was, maybe I just don't watch center backs enough, but Maguire was just, every time he was near Haji Wright, he would just grab him and hold on to him, like both arms around him. And I don't know, maybe Haji could have sold the fouls a little bit more, but anyway, it goes right behind Maguire and McKennie takes it on the half volley and skies it. And you know, maybe he didn't think it was going to get to him because it did pass so close to Maguire. Maguire wasn't even interested in the ball.
I thought he did well. I thought McKennie did well here. Like, he times everything pretty correctly,
yeah.
and hits it well. And sometimes that just happens on a half volley from a ball. It's fizzed in. Weah didn't gently put this ball across. So soccer's
fizzed.
Hard.
Fizzed is a little strong, but... But I agree, it was like difficult, and I think it was unsighted for most of the flight of the cross. Anyway, we don't need to belabor that. 33rd minute, Pulisic off the crossbar. I'm going to play this clip. It's much shorter. McKennie, this is when McKennie takes the ball and spins in one motion to escape Mason Mount after some battling from Tyler Adams. McKennie gallops down the right wing, stops, and swings it to Musa at the top of the box with his left foot. Musa settles it and then swings it to Pulisic on the left side of the box. He stands up Trippier and moves to his left for a quick shot that rings the crossbar. Generates a lot of power from the one step onto his weak foot. And I think at this point, the neutral is saying the U.S. is the stronger team.
For sure. Posts always make people think that you're knocking. And I don't think they were necessarily wrong here. Like, this is a yet another, like, display of real competence from the U.S. Across the board. Adams making a challenge and then being on the ground and, like, completing the challenge while he's on the ground.
Yeah.
McKennie with that delightful pirouette as he's receiving the ball to eliminate a defender and then not let that defender get back into play. Just all across the board here. This is great stuff. So again, if you're, especially if you're a sicko, and you're watching this, I think there's no way you're not like, we are legitimately, playing soccer right now.
Yeah. I think that's what people were so excited about. That has usually not been the case when we play one of the top five or six teams in the world. 36th minute, there's some English pressure on our right side, and then Mount lofts the ball into the box, and Turner claims it, and then he tries to hit Pulisic on a fly pattern down the left channel, just like a sidewinder kick, and it's a good pass, 60 yards, gives Pulisic a chance to make a play, but Stones intervenes. Pulisic doesn't really make a play on it. Again, some Turner distribution.
Yeah, excellent distribution, and yet another warning shot to England that, like, hey, come at us, and we're not just going to, like, let you regroup into your shape before we come right back at you.
39th minute, we get that long throw from West where he wipes his hands on the photographer's penny. Did you notice that?
Yes. What a jolly fellow Weston McKennie is.
Yeah, I don't know what the photographer thought of it, but it was fun. Hodge gets a little bit of a 1v1 with Stones inside the box on the end line, but it's not really that dangerous. And then in the 40th minute, are you good?
Yeah.
In the 40th minute, good move up the right from McKennie and Musa. McKennie springs Weah with a clever ball with his left foot over the back line. And Weah overcooks his cross a little bit. Couldn't find anybody. I think Pulisic, Wright, and McKennie were in the box.
Yeah, so this sort of thing is always going to just happen. But I'm gonna go to bat for Weah here. Like, Pulisic has a big gap between him and the weak side English defender. So what I think Weah was thinking was that Pulisic wouldn't cut into that defender and eliminate that space, that he would stay wide and be able to attack the ball, like, out wide.
That's fair. That sounds fair.
Because it doesn't go over him by that much. Pulisic's just a small dude. And when he's already, like, when he cuts hard towards the goal, a ball that even goes over him by a foot and a half is going to look like it's way over him due to his momentum. So I think Weah's hitting a ball that could be attacked by Pulisic if Pulisic just approaches it differently. There's no like blame to assign here, right? Who's right, who's wrong. It's just two guys reading the play slightly differently.
Yeah.
I refuse to believe Tim Weah actually mishit his cross.
Okay. And then we get the Dest chance. We get the Dest chance after that lovely Weah back heel from a throw in down the line. Dest dribbles into the box and then tries to take a shot with his left foot after cutting in on Maguire. Maguire does well to block the shot. I guess I don't mind the shot too much, but he could have passed it to Hodgie. I think Hodgie was coming open around the penalty marker. But, you know, shoulda, coulda, woulda, Monday morning quarterback, yada, yada, yada.
Tim Weah having fun out there, though.
Yeah.
I mean, that is delightful stuff to see happening in a World Cup game. Like, that stuff we would be celebrating if it was a friendly against Guyana, and we're doing it out here against England in the World Cup. Like, come on, this is good. There's no wet blanketing that.
Nope.
But if I had to, I would say if Sergiño Dest had just had a little bit less rust on him from the last month of not playing soccer, who knows? Who knows what our ceiling would be?
Right. Right. 44th minute, another good bit of play from the U.S. up the right side to Wright, who taps it back for Dest, and Dest, he puts a cross on Pulisic's head just inside the penalty marker, about 10 yards out, and Pulisic doesn't connect. It comes off his shoulder and goes out of bounds.
It was a throwback to that Altidore header against England in 2010. Much more difficult for Pulisic here.
Because it was further away.
Yeah, further away.
Yeah.
And Pulisic is a little guy.
But I think there was less risk of, on replay, less risk of him smashing his face into the back of the defender's head on this one.
Yeah, more just a classic misjudgment of the trajectory.
Yeah. Because the Altidore one, it's like, ooh, that's frustrating that he couldn't get better contact. But also, I totally get it. This one is a little less, I totally get it. All right. And then there's a little spell of English pressure at the end of the game. Bellingham whips a ball in from the right, gets headed away by Zimmerman. Then Shaw collects it and runs at Dest and megs him and pulls it back for Saka. And his off-balance shot is off target. And then Shaw plays it to Sterling, who plays a lovely little one-touch pass into Mount's path for a try from distance, and he hits it with venom from about 20 yards. Turner gets down fast to his right to palm it wide, and that's the half.
There we go. We stood tall. We were measured. We took like what I was thinking was going to be a time-killing exercise for 45 minutes and generated some real chances that when you're the underdog, you're like, okay, those are the kinds of chances that if you can steal one of them, you get your result. So that's effectively like that's all you can ask from a performance in a game like this.
This is an ad-free podcast, and we would ask that you consider supporting us on Patreon. You get access to the Discord, and you get exclusive episodes delivered directly to your phone's podcast app every week. More than 50 this year already. The link is in the show notes. Okay, so England does a little more pressing in early in the second half, it looked like to me. They're coming out and engaging our center backs a little bit more enthusiastically. So that's just sort of the context. Around the 48 minute mark, we get some good transition after Antony takes the ball from Saka and Pulisic drives, which he did a lot throughout this game. He was good at carrying the ball in transition. Kind of looked like, you know, the old Pulisic. He drives and taps it wide to right on the left side. Right cuts in, and it looked promising because, you know, when Wright gets the ball on that right foot or his left foot and has a hit, he can really shoot it well. But he lingers setting up the shot just a bit too long. It gets blocked, I think, by Stones, but it falls to McKennie, who's kind of all alone outside the box, and McKennie tries from 20 yards and hits it way over. Those were our sort of XG contributions in the second half. There were a couple others, but yeah.
I mean, this probably got you out of your seat, right? This moment where Pulisic gets it to right, and then you're like, okay, we're running fast at the goal. This is a fast-moving transition. And then Wright did what Haji Wright, I think, is like here to do, which is he can create his own shot. He can like get this ball running at defenders, and this is what he does in Turkey. And he moves it from his left foot, you know, at the corner of the box to his right foot in a much more central area of the box and gets a shot off, and England's defenders stood well to make the block. But yeah, I mean, that was a moment. That was a really good moment for us to work with. So I thought Haji was pretty solid all game. I mean, he was sort of invisible, or he felt like it, but he had three, four, maybe a half dozen little invisible contributions to things to help them along. And then he had a couple other moments in the box, not many, but where he did a positive thing, even if it wasn't hugely positive, or if it didn't end up having a payoff. I thought he was basically just quietly doing his job.
I would say from this moment, from the, you know, that McKennie shot that goes well over the crossbar until the last 7-8 minutes of the game, nothing really happens that's dangerous for either team. So, you know, about a 35 minute period, we did well, go ahead.
Well, this is what was what my fear was for an England Wales last day matchup where a draw would get both teams through, was that you would essentially have both teams content to not do anything. It's funny that it played out in this game where one team could use the points and the other team was fine without them. So anyway, like this is what it would look like where nothing happens for a 40 minute stretch of a soccer game.
Yeah. I mean, the question is how much did England care about scoring? Which I think is somewhat debatable, but we did well to limit them in the second half, which we did not do as well against Wales in the second half on Monday. So I want to acknowledge that. There's some incredibly good defending from Tyler Adams at one point, you know, taking out Saka down the left wing. I think somebody on the Discord, Wamik, pointed out that Tyler was. Weston, he thought it was really smart that Weston was on the right side to sort of use his most recent experience at Juventus, his comfort on the right side for Juventus, right side of that midfield. And then that with Weston over there on the right side helping to control that flank with Dest. Then Tyler Adams was more focused on covering for Anthony Robinson whenever he got forward. And this was an example of that, where Tyler Adams, this was in the 52nd minute, Tyler Adams tracks back and tackles Saka.
Yeah, pretty vital challenge. And again, just showing what Tyler can do, even if sometimes he gets a little overly enthusiastic.
Yeah.
Overall, I think his enthusiasm is a positive.
Yeah. I also think just even though Dest was rusty, it occurred to me in the second half, his ability on the ball is just so helpful for us. Even when he's almost loses it, he looks like he's in control, or he's like very close to being in control. And we're just not the same team without him at right back, despite his flaws, which I don't think were very much on display yesterday.
No, what we need from Dest in this tournament, and I'm hoping we get it against Iran, we will need it at some point, is that like actual moment of brilliance, right? Like he's obviously showing that he's got all these technical tools.
Yeah.
But as we found him in the final third in good spots, and he's run at people or whatever he's been doing. But none of them have really amounted to much so far in this tournament through two games. So we're going to need that moment. Like, yeah, you have to at some point have it all come together when you're the U.S. trying to get out of a World Cup group. So fingers crossed, we get that Costa Rica reenactment Tuesday.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he's going to be crucial. I mean, that final ball, the final ball just needs to be there, or the shot. Pulisic does a mazy run in the 58th minute from the left sideline and takes a shot that gets blocked for a corner. We get several corners in a row after that, and Maguire keeps nodding them away. In the moment, I thought, man, our set pieces are terrible. What even is our plan? Because the delivery was better from Pulisic than it was on Monday against Wales, but there was nobody there. Well, it turns out we were trying to, I mean, you can correct me if you think I'm wrong, but it seemed like we were trying to scrub Zimmerman loose on the back post, and we just couldn't quite connect.
I think that looked like what we were doing. And also, I think one of the sort of current flaws of our 11 is that we only have two real weapons in the air for these. So we have Zimmerman, we have McKennie, and that's pretty much it, right? Those are the only two guys you really bank on to pull something off. And so even if you get one guy loose, unless the ball you can manage to get the ball like directly into his neighborhood, which we aren't always great at, like you gotta have three guys getting kind of loose, you know what I mean, or three excellent players, so that you just give yourselves more of the roulette table covered up, in effect.
Why? Yeah, Haji Wright really doesn't seem like he's a threat on set pieces. I guess Sargent is a little bit of one, but not great.
No, we're just missing. I mean, Tim Ream just isn't that center back, right?
Right.
Where most teams will have their big center backs up and be real dangerous. And then if we had that plus McKennie, like I really do think just one extra big heading threat, a PFOC. I'm just saying, I think that would make a difference on set pieces. I don't think we should necessarily throw away everything else we're doing to get that bump in our set piece threat. But that's what it strikes me as, is we're one big header short on these set pieces to create enough from them.
Okay. The subs come on in the 68th minute for England. It's Jack Grealish and Jordan Henderson on for Sterling and Bellingham. Again, nothing of note from England in the first 20 minutes of the second half. They immediately start putting a little more pressure on us, and I think it's fair to say we weren't able to generate much danger from then until the end of the game. There were a couple of moments which I'll mention, but they're not much. Grealish had a little success down the left sideline, but I would agree with you. There wasn't a profound sense of urgency, even from him.
Yeah, and again, a lot of the times urgency is a collective thing, right? It's not like Jack Grealish got it and wasn't going to try to do somebody or wasn't going to try to score. It's what's England's structure with supporting that player? Like, how many players are they committing upfield, making runs beyond the ball, so that if Grealish does somebody, then the next dominoes fall and they get their chance. And if it's just watching Grealish try to skin Dest with not much else going on, then you'd say, okay, England are not going to leave themselves open to anything coming the other way.
I noticed in the 76 minute England being a little too patient on the ball, and their fans in the stadium started to boo.
Well, because now we're getting almost into the end game, right? Where you really, really are like, okay, that can be it. We don't have to. We can really shut up shop and totally change our mentality or what our like objective is for the last 15, 20 minutes.
Wait, what do you mean? Like, England can change their... You mean it was a point where in the game where the fans were like, well, now we should try to win the game, and...
No, I guess I'm saying now is when, like, England can... Like, you can sense... Fans can sense when a team is going to just be, like, taking it to the corner. England weren't, like, taking it straight to the corner. But, like, showing no initiative to advance the ball or to get forward. Like, you can start to sense it, and that can be where you're, like, trying to urge them on. I know I had that feeling for the last 15 minutes of this game for our team not showing any urgency.
Yeah. Okay, I gotcha. Aronson comes on for McKennie in the 77th minute. Jack Moore for Dest. Marcus Rashford comes on for Bukayo Saka in the same sort of subbing sequence. We get some good build up the left side in the 79th minute from Pulisic and Adams. Pulisic gets running in that half space and tries to slip right in, but overhits the pass out of bounds. I think Zimmerman has a couple of giveaways, one in the 81st and then one in the 92nd. The one in the 81st is him just putting Adams in a tight spot, and Adams gives it away. But Ream sort of does some desperate defending. Reyna comes on for Weah and Sargent on for Wright in the 83rd. I don't think Reyna particularly made an impact in the game. He had the one time when he stepped past Grealish and tried to slip Sargent in, but maybe should have slipped Aronson in. Other than that, he looked kind of like he has for Dortmund, which is, I don't know, maybe not entirely fit.
Reyna's use today is entirely consistent with a player who is not fully fit. We got 4 extra days of rest for him by not using him against Wales in an incredibly high leverage match where if he could have come in for 30 minutes at his full fitness, he would have absolutely helped us get 3 points from that game instead of 1, in my opinion. But I don't think he was fit to. And then in this game again, 4 days later, let that hamstring get 4 extra days of rest and still only be able to use him for 10 minutes. To me, still screams that Reyna is just not quite fully fit.
I have a Eric Winalda clip. I don't know that it's, you know, I'm just playing the clip. That's all I'm doing.
With Gio Reyna out of the lineup right now, which has been a massive controversy within the team. Even his own, you know, teammates are wanting him on the field, and it seems to be some internal strife with the manager, Greg Berhalter. I don't know how much I should comment on that, but I have been trying to console Gio's father, Claudio, for the last couple of hours last couple of days with everything going on. He was fit to play. Berhalter did lie to the media and kind of go along with that story, which caused a rift between the two of them, and now he's on the bench, which is really unfortunate. This situation should have been handled very differently.
He says, so Winalda says he's been consoling Claudio for the last few days. It doesn't sound true, but...
Well, I guess my question...
Maybe it is. I don't know.
If there's a personal rift between Berhalter and Reyna, and that's why Reyna's on the bench, like, so he punishes him, but still plays him for the last 10, like, I'm going to punish you, but just for the first 80 minutes, and then after that, we're fine. Like, he doesn't have an 80-minute internal suspension here on Gio Reyna and then plays him for the last 10. If there were a true break in subordination here, you don't just limit his minutes to 10. If there was real mutiny going on here with Reyna and Berhalter, then Reyna's not playing. He's going to sit on the bench and frown. But I don't know. I guess that's my interpretation.
I agree with what you just said. I just think it's crazy that Eric Winalda, former national team player, who presumably, you know, knows Claudio Reyna, would just say this. Winalda said this in a LA Times Twitter space. So,
I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if there's frustration here. Like, if Gio Reyna thinks he can play, and you know, I mean, like, players will want to play. So if the staff have decided that he's not fit enough to play without significant risk over long minutes, like minutes restrictions exist, I can totally imagine Gio Reyna being like, no, nuts to that. Like, it's the World Cup, play me, and being furious if he doesn't get those chances. You know, for people who were around following this team in 2010, like, Charlie Davies was irate that he was not included in the pre-World Cup camp, the 30-man camp that Berhalter had. He was cut from that before.
You mean after his car accident?
Yeah, after his car accident. Like, he was certain that he should have still been in the picture for that camp to prove what he could do. And it was like, only later was he like, yeah, it turns out it was just in my head. Like, I'd convinced myself that I was fully ready to play. And this is a completely different degree than what Charlie Davies was recovering from. But like, Davies had been on the bench. Solskjaer would put him on the bench for a game in the tail end of the season, almost as like, an appreciation moment for him. But like,
so he's like, I'm ready to go. Like,
convince themselves that they are maybe a little further along than they are. And I still think that's the most likely explanation here.
Can't wait to see what Wijnaldum says next. We get some, you know, Sargent gets little brothered in by Kane, which was kind of frustrating for me to watch in the 87th minute, because Sargent has just come on the field and he gets a ball kind of played hot to his feet. He loses it. It takes a poor touch. And then it gets played to Kane and he takes like kind of a chaotic angle at it, and Kane just kind of shrugs him off, and I'm like, come on, Josh, you gotta make an impact on the game right now. And he didn't. And we're conceding free kicks for England in our half. There's Moore concedes one later on. There's one after a Zimmerman giveaway where Musa fouls Grealish.
Well, and even before the set piece we end up getting, I think it might have been right after that Kane Sargent incident where Kane was little brother, like, England gets a little shot off, tries to curl one around Turner, who just laughs as he catches it comfortably.
Yeah.
But this is where all of the body language said to me, the U.S. just want the moral victory of the draw here, because Turner, like, lets us get our shape, just drops the ball at Tim Ream's feet, who stands directly next to him. And then Ream and Zimmerman pass the ball back and forth while everyone else stands still for like 30 seconds. This is the 87th minute of a game that the U.S. is effectively losing, you know what I mean? And so this is where, like, there is no longer any chance whatsoever that we can believe that we were going all out for the win. And it just kind of went that way for the last 3 minutes of regulation and 4 minutes of stoppage time, where there was no actual intent to go score the goal, despite putting Reyna and Sargent on here for 10 minutes. There was no intent by the U.S. to actually score the goal. It was like, no, we're going to see this clock to the whistle, and we are going to, you know, brag about getting a draw with England.
I'm going to brag about it.
I know. I know a lot of people are bragging about it. And a draw with England in a vacuum is an impressive thing. But when you step out of the vacuum, you're like, but a goal would really, really do a lot for our tournament chances. And giving up a goal doesn't change anything. It's all reward and no risk. And we didn't go for it.
You know, Berhalter's getting a lot of praise from people who don't know our local customs here in USMNT Twitter, where it's like, you can't really praise Berhalter because people will accuse you of being a shill or whatever. Like, it's just, I saw this one tactics Twitter account from England with, like, you know, 75,000 followers, way more than us, you know? And the guy is like top coach, you know, this is the way they're pressing, the way they're, the way the fullbacks are arriving to press is like, that points at only one thing, fantastic coach. And I'm like embarrassed reading it. It's like, no, you know, you can't say that. It's very, very like, it was like a message from another planet almost.
The game plan was great, right? And that's what I want to keep emphasizing, despite the fact that, like, it's like a tackle football coach who has a great game plan, but then messes up the clock management in a key moment. That's right. All. That's all it is. And again, you can differ with me on this and say, no, it's worth it for the draw. It's worth it for the team to feel that sense of accomplishment going into their last game. I just can't. My risk reward calculator just can't comprehend it.
You follow the science religiously, you know, which I respect that about you. I was gonna say Berhalter. Even though there, I think that seeing that praise makes some sense, and that praise of Berhalter, it makes sense, and it's kind of fun to see as something so different from what we usually see. It does seem like I can't remember a game where we brought on subs and became more dangerous as a result of the subs. Can you?
Well, it'd be Honduras away, but that was, I mean, that's because we,
yeah, that was like that was a crisis.
We put our starting 11 was just a collection of things we found in the attic that we tossed onto the field and said, go do this.
Right. No, but like in the sense where you bring someone on in the 60th or 70th minute and you're like, all of a sudden you're like, oh yeah, we're humming again. That I don't know if that there's ever been a game like that.
I mean, the Gold Cup kind of functioned that way with the backups, with the auditioners. But again, it might have just been more about our depth could definitely beat out the depth of Haiti. You know, like I don't know that it was necessarily big sweeping changes that changed things. I'm not even trying to equivocate here. I thought the game plan was solid for trying to get a result against England here.
Okay. Well, there's that one more forced pass from Zimmerman, where Grealish jumps the route and then Musa fouls him, and then Shaw hits a good set piece that Kane heads wide. Kane sort of rises above Tim Ream. Ream's just kind of tracking him from behind, but the header goes wide. Luckily, I'm not sure what I don't. You know, that's just good strikers miss chances, I guess. Somebody told me that once.
Unconfirmed.
And then we get a set piece, not in the exact same spot, maybe a little deeper. And I don't know exactly what happens, but Pulisic just taps it down the line for Reyna instead of lumping it into the box. And Reyna kicks it off of Grealish. It goes out of bounds. Are you about to say that Berhalter instructed them to do that?
I don't know. But like, again, you watch soccer, you know what the language, the visual language is on one of these set pieces at the end of a game for a team that's down a goal, right? And effectively, we're down half of a goal here, and so even here, I'm still just like, okay, no, we're gonna do this. We're gonna throw everything at it. I see Berhalter doing the calm down motion, right? And what I'm thinking is he doesn't want us to take this free kick until we get every single body into the box. Like I'm expecting to see Matt Turner running from his goal up the field to try to score a goal here because there is no reason to leave him back there other than. You don't want to have the official record show that you lost by giving up a goal with your goalkeeper out of net because all we need is a goal. The only thing that matters is a goal. So we didn't get that. We calmed down. We took 25 seconds to take it, and then we played it into a harmless area of the field so that the whistle could blow. And yes, like to me, that is like it blows my mind. Like I am super frustrated by that, even though it's not like. It's a high percentage chance. It's super unlikely that we would have actually scored here. It's just the decision-making process to know that we actively chose the result that will not help us rather than pursuing a result that will actually help us.
You know, aside from the idea that maybe drawing England is good for morale, it's also true that Berhalter has a lot to prove, you know, as a coach. And I'm not saying this is how he's thinking about it or that it would be appropriate to think this way if he were thinking this way, but it's a resume builder, you know, for him. He's like, he wants to get a result against England just to show that he can do it. And you could argue that that's malfeasance because it's, you know, optimizing our chances of advancing.
I'm sure Bruce Arena was fighting off phone calls from the Premier League after we tied Italy in 2006 and then crashed out. In the next game.
Well, I'm not sure we changed the way the world views American soccer. Probably did more of that than we did changing the way Americans view soccer.
That's my opinion. We really might have changed the way that the sickos view the way we play soccer. Because again, like, I think the sickos can appreciate the quality of play there and how it has looked, that how that game looked different than a lot of games we've played over the past 2.5, 3.5, 4 cycles.
All right. Iran on Tuesday. Sardar, looks like Sardar Azmoun and Mehdi Taremi are both going to be healthy. They caused some problems for Wales. Yeah, I think we win. We win 3-0.
3 points. 3 points. Yep. Any way we get them. Serginho Dest banger.
Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll see you.